Everyone, thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. It's August 2017, and you're listening to episode 47 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Joe Dallas, who is the program director of Genesis Counseling in Tustin, California, which is a Christian counseling service for men dealing with sexual addiction, homosexuality, and other sexual and relational problems. He's the author of several books on human sexuality, including Speaking of Homosexuality, and Joe has been one of our writers for more than 20 years. In the Volume 40, Number 3 issue of the Christian Research Journal, Joe has written a book review of the book American Hookup, The New Culture of Sex on Campus by Lisa Wade, and his review is called The Casual Sexual Revolution. Joe, it's good to have you on.
Great being here. Thank you, Melanie.
Well, the book's called American Hookup, so please describe, what does that term mean exactly?
It's really a new term for a very old form of behavior, and that is the act of physical connection or sexual pleasure for its own sake. A literal hookup may or may not include sexual intercourse, but it will always include some form of immediate and very impersonal sexual connection. And in this case, of course, context is on college campuses. So in essence, a hookup is a casual, spontaneous, non-committal physical experience between two people with no expectation of there being any form of communication, much less relationship after the fact.
So what's exactly the goal of the hookup culture? Specifically, she's talking about college campuses. And do you think it's more prevalent now because of social media and all these different apps by which people can facilitate hookups?
Melanie, that's a question the book didn't entirely answer. Now, Ms. Wade quoted statistics from decades ago indicating that sexual promiscuity is not necessarily happening at a higher rate today than it used to. But two things about it have changed. One, it is much more open now. There's much less embarrassment about it. People are much more casual about it. And this is an important point the book reiterates, it is also much less emotionally intimate than ever before. Now, I realize that sexual promiscuity by its nature is never what we would call emotionally intimate. But what struck me about this book, and I got to tell you, Melanie, I don't shock easily, but what shocked me about the book was how absolutely efficient the hookup culture is and how not only non-committal, but downright completely impersonal to the point of cruelty. And that, to me, seems to be a relatively new thing. So in answer to your question, it does not seem that there is more promiscuity necessarily happening than there was before. But it is more easily accessed, as you said, with the advent of social media and so forth. And there is also much more general acceptance that it is perfectly okay to meet a stranger, engage sexually, and never again recognize them as someone you've had any interaction with.
Well, I know that Lisa Wade in her book claims that, you know, this hookup culture is basically institutionalized on the college campus. How does she make that claim? How does she claim that it's facilitated specifically by college campus culture?
Yes, she did explain that, and it puzzled me when she used the word institutionalized, because actually it is not, of course, officially institutionalized by the college campus. Melanie, you could argue that our universities certainly teach a very permissive position towards promiscuity. But it is not that the campuses themselves are officially facilitating sexual hookups between the students. But it is institutionalized in the sense that there is a common understanding that this kind of behavior is acceptable, and there are sort of routines and rituals the students themselves, not the colleges, but the students, have put together. You know how when you recognize a culture, oftentimes there are not official handbooks or brochures showing you what the rules are, but you can pick up on how the game is played pretty much by the conversations you have and with people in that culture and by what you see. And what has become institutionalized without it being formally institutionalized is the practice of holding hookup parties where it is expected that if you attend, you will be inebriated. It is expected that you will either instigate or respond to a sexual encounter. It is expected that that encounter has no strings attached. And in fact, again, an alarming part of this book, which actually shocked me, was the fact that there is an expectation, not only an expectation, that you will not be vulnerable to the person you've had sex with. You won't want to see them again. You won't want to try to get something going. Actually, she describes a culture in which it is cool to be indifferent. And the winner of the sexual encounter becomes the one who can walk away from it the most casually without any form of friendly connection after the fact, or certainly without any expectation of any connection after the fact. And this, to me, was one of the most disturbing aspects of the book, the idea that there is a genuine contempt, not only for sexual purity, but even for emotional vulnerability. It seems to me a very dehumanizing system.
The reason why I asked if it was institutionalized was I have a friend who recently went to, I'm not going to name the university, a large university where they had orientation for their student that's their child is attending in the fall in a few weeks. And actually from the front, as part of the orientation, university representatives said to the parents and the students, "We want you to have your college life be a place where you would explore your gender and explore your sexuality." And specifically, they talked about boys exploring their sexuality. So that's what I was wondering. I mean, I know it's obviously in the classroom. I have a son who's in college, and so it's definitely in the curriculum that you might take in like a liberal arts class. But it was interesting to me that an actual university orientation mentioned the exploration of sexuality to all the incoming thousands of freshmen.
Yes, and I do think that is a sentiment that is very broadly supported, Melanie, in the college campuses. I don't think the campuses themselves facilitate the actual hookups, but they teach an ethic which certainly encourages that kind of behavior. And I think in many cases, and Ms. Wade explored this some in the book as well, students who otherwise would not explore sexual promiscuity feel somewhat either left out or deficient if they don't, and so they cross lines they wouldn't normally cross.
Now, you're talking about just the total mechanical nature, like there's no intimacy involved in this, and so I'm wondering in her research if she felt that students were or discovered that they were feeling satisfied with kind of this free-for-all approach to sexuality. It's interesting. I regularly read a column in the New York Times called Modern Love, and it just has, you know, it's first-person accounts. It's all different ages. It's not always about sexuality. It's about different subjects. But sometimes it does address college campus. And it seems to me when I read those encounters, the people who are writing them seem so sad about them. They don't seem like, oh, I just have just enjoyed these multiple, you know, experiences with people. They come away feeling kind of, you know, empty.
Yeah, that's the naked emperor that nobody seems to want to acknowledge. We, I think, are operating under the false notion that there is such a thing as casual sex. I would argue that there is not. I think that there is at some level an emotional either desire for connection or even a connection, even if it only turns out to be one way. And as a result, I think people do get hurt. Now, Ms. Wade did interview several students who said they felt depressed, they lost confidence in themselves as a result of hookups. They felt either ashamed that their body was not good enough for somebody else, or they felt that they had given themselves away and gotten nothing in return. So by no means, according to this book, are college students universally satisfied with the hookup culture. There are, of course, plenty of students who don't participate in it, and of those who do participate, many of them report psychological problems coming about as a result. And I think, again, that's because God created us for intimacy, and we are not, no matter how hard we try, I don't believe we are able to divorce our emotional selves from our sexual selves. I think that some level of connection is either desired or expected in a sexual encounter. And of course, this hookup culture demeans that very expectation and shames people for having it. So for that reason, no, all students are definitely not satisfied with it.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Joe Dallas, and in the Volume 40, Number 3 issue of the Christian Research Journal, Joe has written a book review of the book American Hookup, The New Culture of Sex on Campus by Lisa Wade, and his review is called The Casual Sexual Revolution. To read Joe's book review, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is $39.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org. And you'll definitely want to subscribe because Joe is also having another book review coming up, and he will be reviewing the book Single Gay Christian, A Personal Journey of Faith and Sexual Identity. So we were talking about kids not really totally feeling satisfied, emotionally with these casual encounters. She was also saying that this culture kind of promotes what, you know, I think those in the media might call a rape culture and a demeaning of women. Was there any kind of statistics she had to back that up, or how did she handle that particular idea?
Yeah, Melanie, I'll bet you a lot of our listeners right now are saying, well, duh, if you set up a culture and an expectation and you give institutionalized approval to completely non-committal sexual encounters, and the sort of sexual free-for-all that the hookup culture promotes, why, it is very naive to think that that people will not be coerced, forced into sexual encounters that they may not want to complete or be a part of. Because the hookup culture basically does teach you, whether it admits it or not, that the other partner is there for the taking, and you are entitled to take. So, of course, young men who may already be either prone to violence or high entitlement or narcissism are going to be that much more encouraged to jump into that kind of a culture and exploit it. And because it is a culture in which the expectation is sex without communication, why, then a young woman who is not communicating sexual desire to a young man will be seen as, by her silence, giving consent. And so in a drunken environment, he is likely to jump in, try to take what he wants, and if she resists, there's a very good chance he'll simply overpower her and say, no, the way we operate here is we take what we want. I think it would be incredibly naive not to expect rape or at least sexual coercion in an environment like that.
The author also talks about the hookup culture robbing women of their dignity, and that might be like a duh thing as well. How does it do that? I also wonder, too, do you think that the proliferation of ease, we were talking earlier about social media, just online or just through digital means of pornography, causes views of women, maybe by women themselves, if they view pornography as to change how they feel about themselves and their bodies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how could it not? I'll reverse it and try to put myself in a woman's place. There's already a lot of this going on among men anyway, but not as badly as it is among the female population. But, you know, you see magazine covers and billboards with shirtless men who are just perfectly ripped and buffed and have the great abs and the muscles. And you see the TV shows and you see this standard of male beauty that is completely unattainable for most of us. And that is just starting to leave a lot of men feeling less secure. Well, multiply that by, you know, 10s and 20s and 30s when it comes to women, because for decades that's been done to women, now more than ever. Because in the hookup culture, a young woman is taught that she should be sexually desirable to have power. And if you think about it, what could be more anti-feminist than that kind of an idea? My understanding of the women's movement was that it was largely committed to taking women out of a strictly sexualized role and getting them to be respected for their minds and for their talents and for so many other things they had to offer. Now here in 2017, we see on our universities a celebration of women using their sexuality and being used for their sexuality. And in that sense, I can't imagine it being anything but disempowering for women. And if I can stay on my soapbox for just another moment, Melanie, I do think that modesty is a God-given device to protect the soul and the body. I believe that modesty is not a puritanical restriction. It is a way of protecting what is precious and sacred so that it can only be accessed by a person who you're in covenant with and with whom you have mutual safety. I think that women have a lot to lose when we strip modesty away, as we certainly have been doing systematically in our culture for decades now. When you strip modesty away from women, then you strip away a protective device. You teach people that the woman should be valued for her body, and you encourage women to, in essence, allow physical engagement without emotional commitment. And in my opinion, the women, everybody loses, but the women have the most to lose. It's the woman who gets pregnant. It's the woman who contemplates an abortion. And more often than not, as archaic as this may sound, Melanie, it is the woman who, after a sexual encounter, feels like, hey, is this going to go anywhere? Are you going to call me? Will we see each other again? There is a yearning for some follow-through. And when that follow-through doesn't happen, time and again, when that experience is repeated, a woman becomes hurt, jaded, lacking in confidence. So I think that both the physical and the emotional repercussions are largely felt by women, which is why I found it ironic reading this book. Lisa Wade is certainly a feminist in her thinking. She approaches this from a secular position, not a Christian one at all. She, I think, honestly reported on the damage that's done by the hookup culture without in any way condemning the hookup culture. In fact, by the end of the book, her answer to this problem is not to do away with the hookup culture, but just to do it better, to do it more nicely, more politely, with more connection involved. And as I said in my review, the idea of sex without commitment and of that being nice is a pipe dream. It's like you're trying to transplant Sodom into Eden. It's not going to work.
Well, you mentioned that she's a secularist. And, you know, way back decades ago when I took my women's studies class, there was huge sections of it dealing with sexual expression. And, you know, the teaching was that the Christian sexual ethic is narrow, it's limiting, it's stifling your freedom of sexual expression for however you want that to be. But how would you say, because she's not a Christian, that the Christian sexual ethic differs from the hookup culture?
I think that the Christian sexual ethic thinks more highly of sex than the hookup culture does. The Christian sexual ethic teaches that God is the author of the sexual experience, that he created it to be enjoyed and celebrated in the context of a commitment by which both parties are secure, by which both parties realize the other partner will always be there. There is a life partnership, and by which both parties can freely express themselves with no fear of rejection or abandonment the morning after. So I'd say we are much more pro-sex than the hookup culture. I think we think more highly of it. We treat it with more respect. And I think we view it as being sacred. And as something sacred, we are not interested in negating it. We are interested in maximizing it to its full potential to be what it is meant to be. I think that's how we would essentially differ.
Well, I'm sure after listening to this podcast, many Christian parents might be alarmed if they're about to send their child to college for the first time in a few weeks. So what word of encouragement can you give them to prepare their children not to succumb to the pressure of this on-campus hookup culture? Because a lot of Christian kids get there and it is very pressure-filled. It is hard to feel like you're not weird when everyone else is just hooking up with all kinds of people on campus.
Well, I would hope by the time a young man or woman is ready for college, if they were raised in a Christian home, they should have been taught two things very specifically. One, you will be deeply influenced by the primary relationships you develop in your life. So be sure your primary relationships are with Christ-centered people. I think one of the best buffers against succumbing to the hookup culture is making sure that you as a young believer are getting your primary affirmation, your primary emotional intimacy needs met through Christian fellowship and Christian friendships, and that you're staying in fellowship, in study of the word, in prayer, in a strong sense of Christian community, and that makes you much more immune to the temptations of the surrounding secular community. Secondly, I would hope that by the time Christians parents send their sons or daughters off to school, they will have taught their sons or daughters that, yeah, we are different. We operate by a different ethic. I raised both my sons from very early in life to realize there are a lot of things you will see around you that we do not tolerate, that we don't celebrate. You will many times be thought of as different. That's part and parcel of being a Christian. So you should expect disapproval for many of the things that we hold sacred. And we taught our sons to recognize that as a validation of the sacredness of the principles we hold. And I think that that's an important point for parents to reiterate to their kids is, of course, you're different. It's very much like God telling the Israelites when he brought them into the promised land, hey, you will be surrounded by nations who practice all sorts of things that are forbidden to you. Recognize that you are mine. You're a called out people. You operate by a different standard, and you operate, you answer, I should say, to a higher power.
I do think it's very important that Christian parents are equipped to talk regularly and biblically about what a Christian sexual ethic is with their children, starting at a young age and going all the way through. So if you're a Christian parent and you haven't already done that, you should become equipped to know how to express what the Bible has to say about sexuality. And sometimes it can be a difficult thing, but like you said, if you're starting off regularly when they're young and telling them about what a Christ-centered sexual ethic is all about, then that would be normative to them to understand, okay, this is what it means to glorify God with my body. So I want to encourage Christian parents in that way. Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Joe. So, Joe, tacos or a burger from In-N-Out?
Oh, tacos. No contest. There is nothing like a good taco.
And would you rather do your taxes or have jury duty?
You're sure there's not a curtain number 3?
No.
Jury duty, if I must.
jury duty.
Anything but taxes. I mean, torture on the rack other than taxes.
Are you an early bird or are you a night owl?
Early. It's 2 hours in the early morning. I can get more done than I can get done in 4 hours in the late evening.
So you live in Southern California. So let us know, what's one of your favorite things about living in Southern California?
The beach, hands down. There is nothing like a beautiful either early morning or sunset at the beach. The rhythm of the waves, the breeze, even the sound of the seagulls. It's a wonderful experience. I love the beach here.
Well, thanks, Joe, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you. Always a pleasure, Melanie.
Today's guest, Joe Dallas, has written a book review in the Volume 40, Number 3 issue of the Christian Research Journal. His review is of the book American Hookup, The New Culture of Sex on Campus by Lisa Wade, and his review is called The Casual Sexual Revolution. To read Joe's review, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is $39.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Canagraph, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. Follow the Bible Answer Man on Instagram, and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes and rate and review our podcast. Please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Canagraph, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes, where you can subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's new audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.